they're selling to me. I might miss something that I need.
The Moon River Festival opens Saturday afternoon at 12:30 with the Rebirth Brass Band. Doors will close the day with a show starting at 8:15 on Saturday evening. This is Doors from the recent album Good Luck With Whatever. This is a song called Free As We Wanna Be. Writer and singer with Doors is Taylor Goldsmith. After missing each other a couple of times, I finally caught up with him in the airport. They just arrived in Nashville the other afternoon. Well, it's appropriate that you're sitting outside. You've come from Southern California with its wonderful weather and into what might well be the rather humid South. But it's not at the moment. The weather's really nice at the moment.
Yeah, it's really nice here. I was happy about it. We haven't been in a place for so long. Everything feels real nice.
I know it. I was just reading an interview that you gave to Rolling Stone. I think it was probably last year, talking about how it is. Because everything happens so quickly.
Yeah.
And everybody's just kind of sideswiped by it, you know. And to be honest, most of the people I've talked to have essentially the same reaction. Oh wow, now what? And of course,
yeah, I mean,
once
I would
you get
say
past
like,
that
one cool thing has been like I feel like if you had told me in 2019 that like, you know, early 2019, like there's this pandemic coming and these are good, this is how many people are going to die in America and around the world, and this is how long we're going to not really feel comfortable with, you know, being in public spaces together, I would have assumed that it would be total anarchy. And so, like, even though it's been a real challenging, wild time, I feel like, considering what it could have been, sometimes I feel really positive about that. Maybe that sounds crazy. Maybe that's a little off, but that's how it's hit me. I feel like we handled this, even as horribly as we've handled it in a lot of ways, I feel like it's still better than I would have imagined.
Yes. Well, I think the people leading us were essentially, obviously, they were in the same position we were in. And they were just taking it day by day. And nobody was quite sure what to expect.
Yeah, that's why it's so funny when people want to shoot from the hip and like tell everyone else, like, no, that's wrong. You're supposed to do it this way. It's like the reality is no one knows.
In some ways, I think maybe it's going to have a profound impact on us over time to have lived for such a long time in a space where you're never quite sure exactly what's going to happen next.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think I sometimes get sad about that. Just like, oh, I'm going to be talking about this and thinking about this for the rest of my life. And, like, while I can handle it and while it could be a lot worse, it's definitely like, wow, that's gonna be our generation. It's like we lived through this thing that stayed with us. I mean, maybe I'm wrong about that. I feel like every time I try to project into the future, that's exactly what never happened. So that shouldn't worry too much.
For the next few days or so, I was feeling pretty good, but it didn't fix me. I even started volunteering with the local Sacred Heart. We feed the homeless on some weekends. We pick up trash in all the parks. And even though we're cleaning up the whole damn neighborhood, it didn't fix me. It didn't fix me like I thought it. About the spy in East Berlin, I really like the way it ended, how he forgives his friend and turns him in. And I think I see what you were saying about how technically it should, but it didn't fix me. It didn't fix me like I thought it. But I say that out of obligation. I really spent hours on my speech. I thanked my biggest inspirations and the good folks back in Hollywood. But it didn't fix me. It didn't fix me like I thought it.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but at the same time, I think it's true for most of us that we've operated on the assumption that we pretty much, if we get our ducks in a row, and if we basically keep it within the lines, we can more or less predict what's going to happen. We can set goals and we can reach them. That's not necessarily true anymore, you know?
No. I mean, anymore. I wonder if it ever was. I mean, maybe it was at one point. But good point. I feel like every time I've ever thought to myself, this is the future I'd like to see for myself, or this is the future I don't want to see for myself. Like, anything imagined, good or bad, is always just like, we never get the future we imagine. We always get something that's completely unexpected. I mean, this is a good example. And I'm sure that's going to continue to be the case.
It's so true. And that's kind of what makes life interesting, I guess, in many ways, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
One of the things you were talking about with the Rolling Stone, which I thought was really kind of interesting, you started as a musician with a band when you were still a teenager.
Yeah.
You're now in your mid-30s. And so inevitably, as I guess every musician does, because so many start, it seems almost as if you have to start when you're young. You know, it's like if you don't make your mark when you're young, it's probably not going to happen. But the challenge is, of course, is how do you make that transition from being a wannabe and then making some kind of mark for yourself in your 20s? Then you get into your 30s and think, I can't keep doing this. And I was thinking, Jagger, it seems to me, Mick Jagger has that problem. I don't think he was ever quite able to figure out how you make that transition. He's always been 20-year-old Mick Jagger, no matter how old he is.
Yeah.
As a performer, anyway.
I hear what you're saying, I think I'm sure in certain respects that does present as a problem, but I mean, in a lot of ways, I also think that's really beautiful. I mean, I feel like Mick Jagger's probably had gotten one of the coolest lives any of us could have ever imagined, and like maybe in some ways he never grew up, but I think that could be really special. Like, one thing I think about a lot is when we talk about making music, we use the word play. If we're going to play music, let's play this song. And it's not perform, it's not any other word. And I feel like it's because it's so true to what we're doing. We're given this opportunity to like be these little kids rolling around on the rug still playing with our toys. Just in this case, it happens to be our observations and emotions and feelings about the world, you know, along with our badass guitars. So I think you talk to me tomorrow, I'll probably have a different response, but sometimes I'll sort of hang my head being like, what am I doing? And then other times I'm the luckiest guy on the planet. I still get to turn up a guitar real loud and call it a job. I also look at friends of mine that have been able to diversify and get off the carousel. And sometimes I'll have that feeling of like, I never had any other skill set. I wish I could have, I don't know. Anybody would feel this way, but I think no matter what you do, I'm sure there's a part of you that's like, man, I wish I could, I don't know, be a contractor, or I wish I could write a book, or I wish I could, and all those things are possible, but it's just, like you said, like what you devote to at a young age tends to be the thing that you're pretty good at. And my friends were always good at being smart about that. I was never smart about it. And so, like, being in a band became my only option very fast, and that might sound romantic at this point, but I do feel like a lot of those early days were in a panic for me, because it was just like, I can't do anything else. I literally don't know how to, and sometimes that makes me feel like the dunce at the end of the table. But now at 36 and while we all have our off days or whatever, I look at that and think like I got away with something. I'm one of the luckiest people I know.
Wow, that's a lot you just said. First of all, I think that, and one of the reasons I brought it up is because I think you've figured out the way to navigate that transition in a way that, off the top of my head, Tom Petty, Bruce Springsteen managed to do. in that
writers.
You write from the perspective of whatever age you are, but you but you also write with the energy of a 20-year-old.
That's really cool to hear you say that. I think about that a lot. I think about some of my favorite writers who I worship as a single 20-year-old, and then I listen to their records when they were in their 40s or whatever, and they're still singing about being a bachelor about town or whatever, or some sort of existential angst about, like, reckoning with their mortality. I'm like, yeah, I'm not there. I don't think about that in the same way anymore, but you know, hearing a guy like Jason Isbell talk about sobriety, or talk about fatherhood, or talk about the hardships of a committed long-term marriage, I'm like, yes, let's do this. And so I appreciate you seeing that and feeling that, because it's definitely something that I think about and want to bring to this music. Because I also feel like it's a matter of survival. Like, I know some friends, like, before I had a kid, they didn't mean anything by it, but they said, like, watch out, man, you're going to have a kid, and you're going to stop writing songs. It just won't happen anymore. You'll write a few dad songs, and that'll be that. You'll be done. And they were half joking, but half not. And I think half just projecting what they themselves went through. But now that, like, I'm at this place in my life where I have a kid and a wife and a family, and that is more important to me than I ever could have imagined it being. It's like, this is an opportunity for me to, like, be re-inspired, but just from a different avenue, and I don't have to go to that same well of breakup songs that kept me afloat for the first handful of records. It sort of is a challenge, and also like a lifeboat, because it's like if I stay in the same lane, I'll just dissolve and die, because like that's what it's like. I, you know, these artistic ventures are definitely organisms unto themselves, and if you just figure out this works for me, I won't change ever again. It just goes away. But at the same time, it's like, this is also foreign territory to me that I've never explored. I knew how to write a breakup song pretty well, and then it's like, okay, I'm not going to do that anymore. There's that really cool Miles Davis quote, but he said something to the effect of, I'm really good at playing ballads, that's why I don't play ballads.
I think that's absolutely true for you. I think
you can see that, can't you?
Getting at is that you are continuing to challenge yourself and at the same time, challenge what it means to be who you are as a performer, and, you know, the role that you're playing. I was just the other day, again, listening to Bruce Springsteen from those shows he did on Broadway.
Yeah.
And so he's very much in the moment, but he's also talking about how life was when he was in his 20s. And he too has figured out that you can write about anything. It doesn't have to be, you know, written from a 20-year-old's perspective. You know, and in fact, you know, a lot of your listeners are not 20-year-olds. They're gonna be interested to hear what you have to say about how you see life now.
Yeah.
Same as them.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think, I think it, you got to do it right. You know, I mean, I don't know he's necessarily get it right, but there are times where you see like some of the elder statesmen like want to get political and they just go right at it, and sometimes it's a little like, okay, like. The song about Dick Cheney didn't age that well, you know, or whatever it is.
Mm.
So, like, I think you've got to be mindful, but you're right. You can write a song about anything. I think another part of that is, I think, you know, you look at a lot of folks, a lot of songwriters, guys and gals, that, like, as time goes on, they try to maintain that 20-year-old dream. Even in their aesthetic, even in the way they dress, not only in the way they write, but in also the way they perform. They're trying to sell you this version of themselves that they're not necessarily anymore. And I get why it's tempting, because I feel like at 36 and I finish a new Dawes record and then I'm proud, I'm feeling good, I feel like I worked hard and then I listen to what's really, really popular, I sort of like, wow, I'm so far from the culture. I mean, it's hilarious that I would have ever thought I was anywhere near it. And I think, you know, when you're younger, you are on those front lines, and there is a chance that, like, you might speak for, like, a generation in terms of, like, who's on the artistic forefront, which is always inevitably people in the early to mid-20s. And so, like, being a little older now and writing according to me, there is a little bit of, like, acceptance of this fact of, like, I'm hopefully going to be relevant to the people that I'm relevant to, but this tiny sliver of a hope of, you know, world domination that we all enter our 20s with, that had to be retired. It's embarrassing to admit it, but that's never, there's always that tinge of like, well, I'm pretty cool. Like, and everyone is, I'm not saying that I'm not, or someone else is not or whatever, but it's a nuanced transition. It goes along with the transition you're talking about.
Yes, I, you know, to go back to that Miles quote, I think the energy comes from staying on the edge to where you're not entirely comfortable. You know, you're challenging yourself. And then there's also the reality that you're part of a band. And as you've said, you know, the band is a very democratic group. In as far as Dawes are concerned, you guys are all together in this. It's not, you know, Taylor and his band.
Yeah.
Or as Charlie Watts was quoted as saying, apparently Mick Jagger called him.
Oh yeah, when he punched.
You know that story? called him in the middle of the night, and woke him up.
Yeah.
Fuck, I'm not your frommer.
Yeah. So good.
Such a priceless line, you know, because that's like, you know, don't get carried away with yourself, son. You're not the Rolling Stones, you know. You're just one part of a five-man collective.
Fact, yeah, totally. I mean, we talk about that a lot, but like, none of us would be doing the things that we're doing without each other. You know, Griffin, my brother, he does a lot of session work at home, and he's like becoming this guy around town, and he deserves all of it. And I secretly believe he would have ended up doing all that regardless of what band he came from. But, you know, he personally attributes a lot of that to the people knowing about the band. And if someone asks me to help him write a song, I attribute that to the band. Like, it's given us so much, you can't really always draw a direct line. But it's something that the DNA that's created by all four of us is the reason why we are where we are as individuals and as a collective.
Yeah, and that's such a cool place to be, it seems to me. You know, the best bands have that kind of, there's almost this sort of organic sense. It's hard to, the piano player in Tom Petty's band, it's hard to imagine.
Yeah, Benmont.
Benmont, right. Or, for that matter, Roy Bittan in Springsteen.
Yeah,
you know, they create these wonderful counter melodies, just like the piano player does in your band. On some of the songs on the album, Don't Fix Me, for instance, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I love the idea of, like, you know, you can really tell a great band if, like, you line up your favorite bands and you tell them all to play an E chord in 4/4 at, you know, I don't know, 100 beats per minute, and just play. And then I love imagining that I really believe I'd still be able to know who's who. I'd still be able to tell you, those are the songs, those are Heartbreakers, that's the Dead, that's the band. And that's always the biggest appeal of being in a band. You want the strange, ineffable way people play their instruments. Not necessarily like the proficiency, but just that fingerprint, that singularity, to be the thing that makes people know who you are. And, like, you know, for someone to hear just Didn't Fix Me before the vocal even starts, and hopefully say, oh, that's Dawes, and I've never even heard the song before. That's really, like, the dream of all dreams.
I know, and that's so interesting. So we're basically talking about four individuals, and yet when you come together as a collective, you have this kind of collective personality.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you thought, wow, we've got that?
Oh, I still don't have that feeling, really. I think it's just, I wonder if it's, I don't know. I mean, for us, it's like, we're so inside of it, and we're constantly working on it. Like, but also, it's one of those things you can't really talk about, because then I feel like if there's any intention behind creating your singularity, I feel like people are going to smell bullshit. It has to just happen accidentally. And yeah, sometimes it takes a lot of time. You know, any of those bands I mentioned, you hear them at the beginning of their career, and then you hear them at the end, and they definitely, like, settled into their identity. And that wasn't, it's not always necessary right away. Sometimes, like, the early records are maybe sometimes the most derivative, or the most, not derivative, but just kind of chasing down your heroes. And then as time goes on, you just have a natural way you approach your instrument and your other musicians. So I still feel like we're, like, you know, when I hear questions like that, I always want to say, like, give me a year.
Well, it's kind of interesting now you say that, you know, to think of, say, The Dead, for instance. It seems like in the early 70s, as a collective, they decide they're going to go back to what they began being before they became the psychedelic band that they were in the late 60s, and went back to their roots and reinvented themselves. And in doing that, they gave themselves a vehicle that allowed them to do what we were talking about before, to grow, to mature as people, and still be in a band.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, yeah, they're, because, like, even the early psychedelic stuff is so amazing and so unique, but it's also not nearly as unique and special as in my opinion, as, like, where they ended up. Like, just the way they all played. Like, you know, Jerry, all of them, I feel like they learned as they made records and played shows. Like, the musicality of Bob Weir songs by Go to Heaven is so much more advanced than it was earlier on. And the way Jerry plays guitar and by Blues for All is so much more proficient than he could have on those early records. And I just love that we got to witness it, because a lot of times, you know, people show up in our lives, on their records, is kind of fully formed, or not fully, but more formed than The Dead, that's for sure. And I feel like watching the process is part of the fun. I didn't know how to play guitar solo on our first record. I had to write them all and, like, play them over and over again to do the take. And then now it's like, okay, I don't have to think about it. But I'm glad that that's on tape, you know, so even though it's, like, something I might, you know.
Yeah, I think probably there comes a point where you just sort of internalize it, right? You don't think about it anymore. It's something, you know. I'll never forget watching the Stones one time. They were on television, and it was in sometime late 70s, and they started playing, and I'm like, oh my God, it's all going to fall apart. It's so loose. It's way too loose. And then within 60 seconds, it all locks in, and they're off.
I'm listening to them, like, ooh, they don't know that they're not lined up at all. And then right when the vocal comes in, Charlie, here's where to take it, and he flips his one, and they're all in. It's amazing. I wonder if that's the thing you're talking about. Maybe not. They probably did it all the time.
Well, I think Charlie definitely deserves all the credit that you're giving him. You know, I think he was the center. You know, he held it all together for them, so they could just sort of float around and feel in the moment. Yeah. Charlie's right there holding it all together.
Yeah, the way Charlie and Keith play together is one of the most beautiful things music ever did.
Yeah, agreed. And then you start working with Dave Cobb, and Dave Cobb tells you to do essentially the same thing, to strip it all away and just go back to being the band you are in the studio.
Yeah, which was really fun and really like what we wanted, what we needed, and those songs, because of that approach, they all fit really well in the live show. So it was fun to. I was actually listening to a ton of songs when we made that record. So like some of them have a bit of a more like straight ahead rock and roll thing that we always love, but we've never really brought to our own tune. But I was happy that songs like None of My Business and Who Do You Think You're Talking To had a space on this record that they probably wouldn't have made sense on other albums.
Well, I think a song like Who Do You Think You're Talking To is just must feel so blissful, because the melody and the lyric are just of a piece. It's hard to imagine one without the other. That phrase, which everybody has heard, Who Do You Think You're Talking To, all of a sudden, now when I say that, I hear your voice and I hear that melody.
That's really cool.
Where do you think you are right now? Is there a reason you're still digging up the past? Because you haven't touched your drink, and you haven't stopped to think if that holds you back from anyone that cares for you. Who do you think you're talking to?
So we were playing the line and sang so cool, and I had the idea for the verse, but I never had a guitar, so I just sang the melody into my phone and figured out the chord later. Because like, I had the whole verse written, but nothing, no music or anything, but funny how that came out.
Well, I don't want to keep you any longer. I'm sure you've got other things to do, especially since you just got in. I know how those flights feel. It's so good to have you back. Welcome to Tennessee and to Chattanooga this weekend. And looking for. It's always fun to talk to you. I'm sorry we're having to use this less than perfect technology to communicate, but I got what you were saying, and as always, it was fun to talk to you.
Yeah, sure was. Yeah, I'm welcome. We'll see you down in Chattanooga.
All right, sounds good.
Right.
Thanks, Taylor.
Bye.
I don't know how long it's been since you walked away. And after all I said so far, the tender of this bar says the only people left here, man, are me and you. So, buddy, who do you think you're talking to?